Welcome to the Make Me a Pro podcast with your host, Charity Menday.
Hi guys, and welcome to the Make Me a Pro podcast, the online resource designed to help young professionals navigate their careers. This is episode number 7. In this week's episode, I'm joined by Financial Times journalist Courtney Finger. Courtney, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello there, and thank you for this opportunity to talk about a subject that I'm very passionate about. Yes, as you mentioned, I'm the editor-in-chief of FDI Magazine. This is a specialist publication from the Financial Times Publishing Group that's focused on international investment. I'm also the head of content for the FT's specialist unit focusing on foreign direct investment.
Okay, busy lady.
Yeah, quite.
So for those who don't know, how did you kind of get onto the career ladder? How did you become a journalist? And is it something that you've always wanted to do? Tell us a bit about your background and your story.
Yes, well, as you might can tell the listeners from my accent, I'm not originally from the UK. I grew up in Alabama in the US. And I wanted to be a journalist pretty much as long as I can remember. So I really set about that as a very focused goal that I had. In the U.S., to be a journalist, you pretty much have to get a journalism degree, which is quite different than in the U.K. So I went to the University of Alabama and studied journalism and got a degree in that. But the other thing about journalism is that a degree in itself is not good enough. You really have to have a lot of practical experience if you plan to get a job afterwards. So I did loads of internships and work of all kind and really tried to cover my bases, getting experience in news, features, magazines, broadcasting from TV to radio, and pretty much everything that I could do. I moved to Washington and got a job there on a wire service, but I had a big dream of living and working in London, and I decided to make this happen by coming to the UK as a student, which helped get me a visa and a way into the country. But also, I had started to realize that in the UK, having just, quote, just a journalism degree isn't really so well respected. You need to have a degree in a kind of more real subject. So I thought this might complement my journalism degree if I got a master's in something else. So I decided to study at Edinburgh. And I got a master's in international and European politics with a focus on trade and political economy. And it was a bit of a gamble because I came to the UK with really not any money, just a student loan to pay my way and really nothing to go on. But the gamble paid off because after I finished at Edinburgh, I was extremely fortunate to get offered a job in London at a small publishing house called the ARC Group, running a magazine, which gave me a work permit and a way into the industry. And that was a really difficult experience because I was thrown in the deep end running a magazine for the first time. But it was extremely beneficial because I learned a huge amount. And after 2 years there, I was offered the job at Financial Times running FDI Magazine, which is really no exaggeration to say it was my dream job, involving the exact topics that I like: politics, business, trade, investment, and it's super international, and it kind of held the prospect of global travel, and it has pretty much lived up to that, and that's how I spend my time now.
Wow, that's so cool.
Yeah, and I've been now, once I got my dream job, I just have clung to it as hard as possible. And I've now been in this role for 10 years.
Wow. So how did you did your master's, and then 2 years later, you became editor-in-chief of a massive, massive kind of publication. Talk us through your kind of job application process. How did you not only amass the internships, but also as a graduate in kind of searching for a role, how did you find that process, and how did you kind of sweet talk your way into the right roles?
Well, it's a lot of things is a bit fortunate and things fell into place at the right time, but I also think there's an element of putting myself in the right situations in order for fortune to smile on me. And a lot of it was having a big network and just applying for everything I could find and casting the net as wide as possible. When my waning months of my degree in Edinburgh were upon me, it was an extremely stressful time because I didn't have a work permit to work in the UK. Mm. And a lot of companies don't want to bother with you because they don't want to go through that hassle when they could just make a local hire. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. I was applying everywhere I could think of. And the majority of companies were saying, do you have the right to work in the UK? And the answer is no. And they would say, then no, thank you. And it was, you know, very challenging because I was facing, you know, eviction from the UK, having spent a huge amount of money on a degree to only then go right back to where I started in the US. And that was frustrating. Mm-hmm. So eventually, you know, the clock was ticking on me and I applied for a job that I saw in London, again, at the small publishing company, went down for an interview, which was really kind of the last chance saloon for me. And mm-hmm. I remember taking the train down and saying to myself, this job is mine. I am getting this job. And I did again that they happened to like me in the interview, but also I was very, wouldn't say aggressive, but I was really hungry and they thought this, they liked this because I really wanted this job. Mm-hmm. And, they also just needed someone and they liked a bit of my background and some of the skills that I developed through all those internships and also the work experience I had in Washington because I'd spent 3 years working there, mm-hmm. including for a business magazine. So it just fit. Mm-hmm. And they decided to take a punt really and go through the work permit process, even though being a small company, they'd actually never done that before. And they joked with me later that if they'd known what a pain it was, they might not have done it. So I lucked out in that respect. And then the FDI job was a very good turn of events. While I was still at Edinburgh, a contact of mine in the Swiss government, wow. who I had dealt with when I worked for the business magazine in Washington, mm-hmm. was hosting a press tour of international journalists, so bringing them to Switzerland to show why it's a good place to invest. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, do you want to come on this trip as a freelancer and maybe you can sell the story? And I thought, great, free trip to Switzerland. And if I can sell a story and maybe it open up some doors for me.
Yeah.
And he told me, you know what, there's this new Financial Times magazine focused on FDI. And they can't send anyone because they're short staffed. So maybe you could pitch them and write for them, mm-hmm. which I did. I followed up. The current editor, it was spun out of a sister publication called The Banker magazine. And mm-hmm. the editor of The Banker was kind of running both. FDI was a fledgling thing that he was running on the side.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, we're happy to, you know, see if we like your story if you go on the trip. Mm-hmm. So I went on the trip. I pitched a story to FDI after. He really liked it and said, do you want to do more? And I was thrilled about this because as a poor student, having some freelance money was euphoria for me. Mm-hmm. But then I thought, this magazine has got my name written all over it. So I kept in touch with the editor. When I came to London, there was no immediate job there. Mm-hmm. It was such a new enterprise that they weren't looking for a full-time editor or any staff really. Mm-hmm. But I kept in touch with the guy who was running it when I came to London and got the other job. We met for lunch. And so when the time came a little while later that they realized the magazine was looking to be a success and they needed someone to run it full-time, he called me.
Okay.
And to me, I guess that's a lesson, something that I try to advocate of young people who are at the early stage of their career is to make these connections because you really never know where it might lead, even mm-hmm. if there's not an opportunity right at that moment. Mm-hmm. If you're on people's radar and in their network and making yourself visible, you can end up getting a call like I did.
Mm-hmm. And I think that actually leads into my next question quite well. What are some of the key tips that you would advise young professionals to follow through and pursue?
Well, I guess if I look at my own experience, one is to look at some of the small and lesser known companies. I think there's often a big focus amongst graduates to go for the big names mm-hmm. because, first of all, that's the ones that they know and there's some kind of prestige attached to that. Mm-hmm. But if you investigate whatever your chosen industry is thoroughly, you'll find that there are small to mid-sized companies that are probably more willing to take a chance on a less experienced person mm-hmm. just because they have greater need. And the other benefit of starting with a small company is that you'll probably get a wider range of experience. And that was the case for me, getting kind of thrown in the deep end and expected to do a huge amount because they were small and short staff really gave me a wider breadth of experience than I might have had I started, for example, at Financial Times. Mm-hmm. So that would be number one. Number two, I would say cover your bases, you know, get a range of experience, you know, have an idea of a goal and an industry or two that you're interested in, but don't be too niche, you know, try to get a range of experiences. Don't be afraid to muck in and do some kind of menial task because they're still teaching you a lot about work ethic and mm-hmm. showing that you're hungry. So cover the bases, seek out work experience. I know it's hard. A lot of those today are still unpaid, but I would say that's just the way it is. I would say intern at CNN one summer, 9 to 5, and wait tables in a restaurant 6 to 11.
Yeah.
You know, just get on with that and do it. Get work experience, try new things. Because even if they're not paid, which again, I know is difficult, you could still come away with a really fantastic reference and recommendation, which is going to serve you well later. Mm-hmm. I would say be a networker. You know, make sure people know who you are. You don't have to be super aggressive, but be out there, be confident, follow up with people. If you meet someone interesting or relevant at a networking thing, follow up and send a nice note, mm-hmm. So that you're memorable and make these connections early on. And don't be scared to let people know what you're looking for. Wow. You know, we met your job seems really interesting. I'm interested in a similar field. Mm-hmm. You know, how did you get there? Mm-hmm. And just, I think people are at senior levels are more willing to give advice and cultivate connections than young people might think. Mm-hmm. And again, as happened to me, you never know what doors these connections might open for you later on. So it's worth keeping them. Mm-hmm. And then I guess, have an end goal in mind. I mean, the goal might change, you know, you might, I don't know. I at one time thought I wanted to just work in broadcasting and I ended up in print, but I had a rough goal that I wanted to be in media. Mm-hmm. And so you think, well, I really want to be a successful person in media 10 years from now. What do I need to do today to make that happen? Mm-hmm. Well, I needed the right degree. I should get experience in this. And that all translates to this very day. I should study and do well on this exam because it's going to set me up well. So I would say set a goal
and work backwards. Yeah. Okay. I hear that. And as a journalist, I think one key thing we'd all want to know is how do you ask the right questions when you are at a networking event or when you even are in an interview situation? How do you get the most for yourself?
Yeah, I think that as a journalist and also just in general in an interview, people should not be scared to ask a really basic question and shouldn't be scared of asking what they think might be a dumb question. Mm-hmm. And not to overthink it. I mean, I kind of approach when I interview people as a journalist, I don't feel I need to set up a question by proving what I know about the topic. I might just say to a finance minister, how's your economy going? And let them talk. Mm-hmm. And I think you could apply that rule in a job interview and say to them, okay, what's this company seems to be doing well, which shows that you've looked into it and you care. What's your forecast for this year? What are your strategic priorities coming up for the next year or two? And how might my role fit into that? You know, your questions can be very basic mm-hmm. and give the other person a platform to give the information that you need to know. Mm-hmm. And also not be afraid to say, to ask about salary. There should be no shame in that. I think it's a little bit of a cultural thing. In the U.S., we're much more comfortable talking about money. I find that British people really don't want to do that.
Yeah.
But there should be no shame. Shouldn't be the first question you ask.
Yeah.
Ask first about the company, the role. What would my average day be like? What would be my top duties and priorities? And then eventually asking what would the salary be? And if they say the salary amount, it is completely fine to say, is there room for negotiation? doesn't mean playing hardball, but you're showing that you value yourself.
No, definitely. And in terms of kind of faux pas or things we should stay away from, what would be your kind of tips?
Well, I would say one faux pas is you don't need to show that you're an expert about the company, but you do need to show that you have researched it a bit. So avoid making it obvious that you haven't thought enough to look at the company's website, find out about their products and their services. It's a major faux pas to make it obvious that you didn't do any amount of research. A faux pas, which is basic, is appearance. And I don't mean physical appearance. I mean, you know, it's a faux pas to not make an effort, to look untidy, to be, to seem flustered and disorganized. I have a hang up about messy hair. You're not getting a job with me if your hair looks messy, because that shows to me I can't send you out to have a meeting with a prime minister. So it's a faux pas to not show care. It's a big faux pas to be late. Obviously, I'm not a super punctual person, but I think if someone's coming for an initial job interview and they were extremely tardy, I would be massively, massively unimpressed. And I think it's a faux pas in general to be too negative about anything, about your experiences, other companies, other experience you've had, your studies, or anything. You need to be positive and you need to be confident.
Okay, I hear that. A lot of kind of food for thought. And if people wanted to get in contact with you, Courtney, how would they do that?
I think in the first instance, I'm very happy for people to send me a LinkedIn request, for example, with a note. I think that's a good approach. I have no problem with people also just emailing me on my work address. I'm quite open, because I know how it feels to be at the start of this journey. So I'm always happy to give advice as and when I can. So I would say emailing me at courtney.fingar@ft.com, or preferably send me a LinkedIn request with a note.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for that, Courtney.
Thank you.
And thank you guys for listening in. As always, you can find more information on makemeapro.wordpress.com, or like the Facebook page. And if you want to get in touch with me directly, you can find me on Twitter @MissMende, or just give me a Google on LinkedIn. Until next time, guys.